Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Well, today we are starting a series that I've been trying to do for almost a year now. You may remember my road trip to Louisiana in season two. Well, the Louisiana Municipal Association was so excited by the response we got that they invited me back to explore and share even more small towns in their state. We partnered again with the Louisiana Municipal Association to identify some new small towns, and we're so appreciative to the Louisiana Economic Development for sponsoring this series. Now, I scheduled this trip back in February, and I moved forward even though I heard there would be some winter storms coming through Texas and Louisiana during my visit. Those turned out to be a little more serious than I expected, causing power outages across the state and water issues in many cities. Even under these conditions, the state and the small towns I visited, they welcomed me with open arms, and I can't wait to share these episodes with you. But before we get started, I felt like we should check in with John Gallagher, the executive director of the Louisiana Municipal Association, and just to see how things have been going over a very challenging year. Well, John, it's good to see you again. It's been, I guess, about a year since we saw each other. How's it been going?
Yes, it has. It's been, I guess, to say the least, interesting. Interesting. And challenging for us as well. I'm sure for you and Osceola and your folks in Georgia have experienced some of the same issues with COVID. Who thought when you gave your talk at our midwinter conference?
That's right. That was in Baton Rouge in February of last year.
Exactly. That I literally probably less than 30 days later, we would be locked down in our homes facing this coronavirus and the COVID-19 pandemic. And to say that posed many challenges, I mean, for us as an organization having to immediately transition into
You guys were doing some remote working.
Exactly. And I have to give credit to our IT department. Almost overnight, we transitioned to remote, where our board meetings were remote, where we're having updates, and most of our communications were done remotely by video, which is something different. And that posed other issues as well, because you know a lot of our rural areas, small areas, broadband, high-speed internet just is not there. And when we, even just having a board meeting, we had some board members that really couldn't participate except through a cell phone or a landline because they just didn't have the capabilities to upload and to video stream the video to participate, which posed some problems. And that's one of the big issues that we, association, going to be working on this year is working on getting broadband to the rural areas. And on top of the pandemic, you may know we had quite a flurry of just back-to-back-to-back storms. I guess you would say back-to-back-to-back-to-back. About five, I think we may have had about five tropical storms to hurricanes that hit. A Hurricane Laura that came up right, just bullseye right into Lake Charles was, I think it was called the third largest or worst hurricane to make landfall in Louisiana in our long history of storms. And I went down there soon after, and it really brought memories of Katrina in New Orleans. It was just looked like a war zone. I was just really taken aback at the damage that I saw. And give all due credit to Mayor Hunter, Nick Hunter, who did an amazing job working through those issues, along with the other mayors in Calcasieu Parish, because it just devastated that parish. And the unusual thing with Hurricane Laura and Delta that followed it was it impacted the entire state. For instance, you had the city of Ruston and your community, small communities in North Louisiana, including my hometown of Shreveport, that actually were under hurricane warnings like for the first time in their history.
Right, it's so far off the coast that's not normal at all.
Pineville, our town of Pineville, and some of these smaller towns in Repeats Parish saw a lot of damage. Even a lot of our small towns with their rural, their small water systems were literally, because of all the trees were knocked down, uprooted the water lines. And, yeah. and so folks were without water for quite a while. And it was just really a collaborative effort with Louisiana Rural Water and other entities to help get the water systems back going. I mean, it was just, but it showed really the resilience of our small towns and a sense of community. There's an outpouring from corporate folks that came in and lent equipment, lent assistance, water, food to the citizens. It was amazing, but it was really, really stressful to us as an organization.
Oh, I'm sure. And you may have just hit the perfect theme word in there, but I was going to ask you, with you guys dealing with the same pandemic, public health crisis and issues that everyone has literally around the globe, but then also having that many just category 5 and really just strong, powerful storms do that much damage. If you can summarize, which would be hard to do, the response of your cities, towns, and villages, since you have 3 categories, but you know, especially small towns. And you said the word resilience, so that might be it. How is everybody doing? How is everyone bouncing back? I hope bounce back is the appropriate term.
I think bouncing back is good. I mean, folks are coming back. We're seeing the sales tax revenues coming up. When the pandemic hit and people stayed at home and weren't out retail,
right.
weren't shopping,
locked down.
And they were locked down. And some of our bigger cities, as you know, that are totally dependent on tourism and sales tax revenues were hit pretty hard. And a lot of our small towns were, but there were a few, I have to say, that small towns that actually weathered the pandemic pretty well, because a lot of their citizens may go from their little small town to a larger town down the road to the Walmart or the Target and the big box stores and do the grocery shopping and do their shopping. And when the pandemic hit and people are like, I'm staying at home.
Right, closer to home.
Their little homegrown grocery stores and the hardware store, the Dollar General, saw an increase in their sales taxes. And actually, their tax revenues were level, if not increase. So, I mean, that wasn't the norm, but we did have some towns that reported to us that did kind of weather the storm, so to speak, during the pandemic.
Well, Georgia's been through some similar things. All the states in the United States have, but it's been great to be able to come back to Louisiana. So I want to thank you guys for partnering with me again on going to visit 5 small towns, 5 more small towns in Louisiana. I'm just looking forward to touching base with you at each one.
It's great to have you back. And I do want to just give a little shout out to our sponsor. As Season 1 of Small Town Podcast was well received. It caught the attention of our Louisiana Department of Economic Development. And Secretary Pearson, through his staff, wanted to underwrite and sponsor Season 2. So we just want to say thank you to Economic Development Secretary Don Pearson and his staff for sponsoring Season 2 and Louisiana Economic Development. Without them, wouldn't probably have Season 2 would not be possible. So, but thank you, Secretary Pearson.
I want to thank him. I want to thank you guys, and look forward to touching base a few more times in the next few episodes.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
So, small towners, now we begin our first episode in a 5-episode road trip series in the state of Louisiana. Today, we visit a small town on the banks of the mighty Mississippi River that, because of the river, is known as the City on the Move. And we visit with a mayor who loved his hometown so much, he had to serve to help make it a better place again. We're going to go talk with Mayor Buzz Kraft in the small town of Vidalia, Louisiana. Come go with me.
Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. Soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey. And I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got 2 traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a 3rd anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast. And I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia.
Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Our nation is going through an incredible transition right now. There's a mass migration to small towns and rural communities. People are seeking out vibrant communities with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, low cost of living, and strong local economies. If that sounds like something you would like to find, then I invite you to discover the city of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. All right, I'm now in the town of Vidalia, Louisiana. We're in the city council chambers. I love doing this when I'm sitting here where the business of the town is taken care of. And I'm sitting with the man who leads meetings in this chamber, the mayor of Vidalia, Mayor Buzz Kraft. So Mayor Kraft, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to Vidalia.
And actually, I asked you, I made sure, because now, you know, I'm from Georgia. We have cities of all different sizes, but they're all cities. Here, you have cities, towns, and villages. And you said officially you're a town, but there's a slogan that goes with some things, your town. Explain that.
Okay, we're called the City on the Move. Back in the late 30s, the town was moved, actually, where the Mississippi River Channel is today. And ever since that time, it was called the city because it was actually moved, literally, and picked up and moved into what is currently Vidalia. So that's why we're called the city on the move, even though we are considered a town based on population right
now. So technically defined as a town, but the slogan still remains, the city on the move. The
slogan remains, city on the move. And I like it. I mean, it's fun.
So. Not many municipalities of any stripe can say, we were actually moved from one place to the other.
Picked up and moved. I mean, we have pictures around our council room that's got showing actually moving buildings and putting on these wagons and brought and located throughout different places in town.
Well, that's pretty cool. I want to get some of those pictures for our social media so people can see those.
Sure, sure.
Look forward to learning more about the city on the move, even though technically it's the town. But first, I want to learn about the mayor of the town, and that's you. So we'll start with my standard first question. Were you born in Vidalia, Louisiana?
I was born in Natchez, Mississippi, which is right across the bridge from Vidalia. Most people that live in Vidalia probably were, if they were born in this area, born in Natchez, because that's where the
main hospital.
That's where the hospital was, old community hospital. I was born there, but I mean, my mom and dad lived in Vidalia, and with three other boys, raised us right here in Vidalia, all of us.
Well, so born and raised, pretty much. It's just a psychological thing. That's just the next town over. It just so happens because of the Mississippi River, it's also the next state over. So sometimes that throws people off, but it's no different than in Osceola. I go to Fitzgerald if it just happened to be because it's just 10 minutes up the road. But yeah, I stayed last night right on the Mississippi River and could look across the river, and there's the Natchez, which is in Mississippi. But
right.
That's just the way it works. It's still very communal.
We call it the Miss Lou, and there's a lot of towns and cities along the Mississippi River that there's nothing across a bridge from them. It's just, but here there's two cities just
right.
Having this river that goes between them.
Yeah.
So it's pretty unique. It's a unique area here that we live in, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, I'm sure you like to hope to bring people from Natchez over to Vidalia to spend their sales tax dollars.
Well, and we have that a lot. We have that, and here's what we always say when we're trying to do economic development here. There's people coming from Natchez to Vidalia and from Vidalia to Natchez, and both people, it intermingles. People from Natchez work here, people from Vidalia work in Natchez, and it's just a bridge that separates us, but really a community that is very unique, I think, and we benefit off of each other, really.
It's a two-way bridge.
That's right.
Traffic keeps going
Absolutely.
Both directions, everybody's
right.
happy. So.
Right.
Well, after being born and raised in this community, what did you do after high school?
After high school, I finished at Vidalia High School as a proud Viking. We're the Vidalia Vikings. And I went to Louisiana College, which is a Baptist college in Pineville, Louisiana. Played baseball there and got my degree in accounting, had a minor in economics, and that was my education. And later I went right to work for a local bank and worked there for 23 years. Went to graduate school of banking at LSU and school of banking. And that's pretty much some of my business background and where I got a lot of my background.
Now, you mentioned to me you got a degree in accounting. It wasn't initially your intention to go into banking specifically, but you said the timing was everything.
Yeah, I did what you do not do in an interview. I went into, I was wanting to get an accounting job, and there was an accounting job going to be coming up in November at the local school board that I wanted that was going to pay way up almost twice as much as what the bank first, And so you finished school as an accountant. In June, of course, all accounting firms, April 15th has just passed, so they're winding down. They're not needing to look for people to work.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I got called in by the local Mr. Gore and Willie's Travis Gore, who was the president of the bank. They knew me, went to church with him. He said, "Hey, come give us a shot." And I go in there, and they basically offer me the job. I'm going like, "Well, I just want you to know I'm not staying." You know, I'm basically trying to turn down the job before I ever took it. And it started out a whopping $800 a month. Yeah.
There you go. So, yeah. But they still gave you the job even after you said that?
Yeah.
They must have really liked you.
And 23 years later.
So you ended up, you did stay.
Well, that's for 23 years, yeah.
Yeah. More than the 6 months before the school job opened up.
So, and by the time it got to that job, I got ingrained in this and really liked it. So.
Yeah. Well, at some point in there, you got involved in local government. So tell me about, even if that's more civic organizations or things, how did you, because this was hometown. It wasn't
hometown.
To
I was, look, I after I left the bank, I was in the timber business and still am, and I wanted to fish professionally, bass fish, and going into the timber business afforded me the time to do that. And I fished a lot of stuff in Texas, which is FLW events. And they basically, I actually qualified to fish a tour, which is a pro, touring pro, but I didn't have the money or sponsors. So I just, you know, it just rocked along. So the late, I mean, from 2004, when I left the bank, all the way up to about 2014-15, I fished and really had a wonderful time.
Yeah.
Logged a lot of hours in tournaments over there and was really happy with that experience. There were some things going on here in town. We had a mayor. We have some great things. We have a great town, no doubt. But, you know, the current mayor that I was running against had been here 24 years. A lot of people felt like it was time to move on. A lot of people were begging me to run. And I had one of a phone call guy come up and just say, "Buzz, your town needs you." He said, "You can win this election." I said, I know I can win. It's just, is that what's going to be best for my family? And I'm not a politician. I'm not. I'm a realist that just, I believe, you know, when everybody talks about being a mayor, it's a responsibility. It's not an honor, because a lot of people call you your honor.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, nah, look, I got a job.
Right. You
know? And that's to do what's best for our town.
It's just a very different interview process.
Yeah.
There's an election instead of walking in and talking to somebody with questions and answers.
Absolutely.
So that was what year?
This was 2016.
Okay.
2015 was when we qualified, December, and the election was held in March of 2016.
And I think you guys, because like in Georgia, elections generally take place in November, and then you're sworn in January the following year. But it happens pretty quick.
The election was March the 5th, and, mm-hmm. and you don't take office till like July 1.
Okay, so it is a few months. It's just mid-year.
Man, it was felt like forever, but when you got elected to when you got there. And then what happens is since all this change is coming, all these rumors and things, what you're going to do.
Oh, yeah. Worry about it. You're going to clean house. You're going to bring in.
Yeah. But we had some really tough financial constraints and issues when I got in office, and proudly to say, we have overcome those, and we really, really are doing well. I'm really excited for our future here in Vidalia. Really am.
Well, tell me this, because and I did the same thing, so it's not a criticism. I'm just kind of curious. There are several people I talked to, and I guess it goes both ways. I said there's several. There are people who, like you and I did, just run for mayor without ever serving on council. What made you want to do that as opposed to maybe getting in and kind of learning things at the council level first? Was there anybody pushing you to maybe run for council?
No, not ever. Not ever. Never even considered it,
yeah.
You know, until a lot of people. Honestly, I had a good feeling when I decided to run. I knew so many people working at the bank. I had a lot of people I took care of, you know, financing some homes, cars. These people relied on you with their life. You know, when you're a banker, you come in, they know everything about you. You're part consultant, part
right. There's a lot of trust built.
A psychologist for them, and then you know. So a lot of these people, you know, when I first announced that I was going to run, a lot of people went, "Oh no, he ain't away and win." You know, this guy's been there 24 years, and I said, "Just sit back and watch," because a lot of the people trusted me, and they did, and I think now, and looking back, they're really glad they did. I really do. And we're going to always have those people that don't. I know you probably don't, but that's one of the hardest things that I had to deal with as far as dealing with being in a mayor's chair, is there's some people that don't, they know nothing about you, not know anything about who you are, but they don't like you.
Yeah.
And it's sad because, you know, that's the ones that's usually the vocal Facebook people.
Right.
Are the ones that, this guy, you know.
Those are the only ones that show up to the council meetings for public comments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And nobody shows up to say, we really love what you're doing. You're doing a great job. Yeah. Just wanted to encourage you in this public forum.
Yeah, and everywhere you go, and even people that knew me from college are going like, but, man, we're hearing great things about what's going on in your town.
Right.
Man, we wish you could live in our town and be our mayor and get us straight. And you know, and then you got these few people that can't see the forest for the trees and the good things that's happening. And the only reason I complain about it is because I am proud of our community, and I don't like any negativity in it. And it's unwarranted what they do. Because when you're trying to do what's best for the people as a whole, you hate to see that torn down or the effort that you make rain on somebody else that's really enjoying happy with their town.
Well, and I guess the challenge of this role is, what's the population of Vidalia?
The last census that was actually finished and completed was 42 or 300. Okay. But this last time with COVID, you know, there are some people that they didn't do the door-to-door stuff, so the numbers are going to be down all over the country, mm-hmm. I think, because people are scared to.
But you feel like things have been pretty stable, maybe even grown a little bit.
I think so.
42, 4300.
Yeah, okay. And we've been able to recruit some new industry here. And then, of course, there are startup companies, and you know, COVID's hit, and there's been some difficulties, but we're still proud that they're here. We still think the future's going to, you know, everybody get vaccinated and get over this pandemic. We're going to be sitting real pretty out there early.
So you've got about 4,300. Osceola's got about 3,400. And the trick about this position we're in, all 4,300 in yours and 3,400 in mine need us to make whatever is their primary, their most important priority, our most important priority.
Absolutely.
And you're never going to be able to do that for all those people. And it sounds like things are going good economically here, but I'm sure you don't have the resources to do everything that everybody wants you to do. And so you have to prioritize and make decisions. Same thing in Osceola. Mm-hmm. And so people, that's that part that I wish everyone could kind of sit in the office and absorb that one day and get that perspective, mm-hmm. because that's what it is. It's just not being able to satisfy everybody's primary thing all at once.
Yeah.
And so then you have people that go, well, you're corrupt. You're, you know, all those kinds of things. And yeah, usually on social media.
Oh, yeah. I think being a mayor would have been a lot more fun without social media. I really do. One of the things that I have prided myself on is really being transparent. But those people will tell you, no, you're not being transparent. He's hiding things. No, I call the press, all those people who are journalists, they come in. I invite them in. Please come in. I'll hand them the audit. I'll hand them the everything.
Yeah. These are all public record anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's public record. And I want them to know everything. I want that to be conveyed to our constituents in the news because – and that's all I ask of journalists is just present what...
The whole story.
The whole story.
Yeah.
Because anybody can take a part of a story and turn it around. I mean, it happens every day on Facebook, you know, and they don't tell the whole story. They tell the story part of that doesn't put you in a good light. They don't tell you the rest of it and why you did what you did.
Right.
So,
well, like, as I was telling you, as I was setting up, that was kind of my, you know, taking on the initiative of doing this podcast is... Small towns, especially, you know, in the overall media, we get a lot more attention when something bad happens, when there's corruption, when there's financial downfall, when there's, you know, how we can't react fast enough to natural disaster, you know, all those. That's when the media vans roll in.
Yeah.
And when things are just going good and you're meeting your budget and you've opened a new park or you've done some kind of revitalization, they're not coming with the cameras to put that on the 6 o'clock news because that's not as sexy a story, I guess.
And that's, you know, that's kind of sad. Really, and that's what it takes now for people to buy information or news. It's got to be something salacious.
Something that's going to really
grab your attention. That's going wrong in the world. We all knew it was going wrong. You don't see that everyday life where those, you know, those people are getting touched or fed or those people who are doing good things in the community. They're not put up high enough on or brought to attention. It's always the negative.
Yeah.
And that's just like what we're dealing with right now in this pandemic. I mean, not pandemic, but this situation we're going through now, we're having unprecedented storm this year.
Oh, yeah.
Which
came just in time for Louisiana to be a winter wonderland.
Yeah, and you know, we've never had this before. Here we are. We're usually in February, we have mild temperatures. Usually, if you get down in the 30s in the morning, and by evening, it's going to be up in the 50s, maybe low 60s even, you know. And now we had an ice event that actually put 5 inches of ice, a sheet of ice, starting Sunday night, which, by the way, my dad passed away this Sunday. and that was a rough night. It really was. And I was out. And when I left Vidalia to go to the ferry to pick up my mom from the hospital, on the way back, it had already started icing over. It was that quick.
Yeah.
It was horrible. It really was. And then Wednesday, it was a pretty sunny day. Didn't ever get over above freezing. And then Wednesday, 100% chance of freezing rain.
The second wave.
Right. And see, this rain, when it hits these trees and limbs, if it's ice, it just bounces off. It don't sit there. But when it's rain, it'll hit. And every raindrop that hits, it just grows, and just it weighs the lines and the trees down. And we've had power. I've been without power for 2 days and without water. I told you earlier a while ago, I just bathed at City Hall in the mop closet and washed my hair. So, but hey, look, it's all good. It's all good.
That's right. Well, let's talk about the whole story and the good things that are happening in Vidalia. So I'll go back to this when you know, kind of got your reason for running for mayor. What were some of the things that you did? It sounds like there were some things you had to address issues-wise within the city, and then I'm sure you've worked on some things that have taken the city to the next level.
Well, there were some difficult things you had to do. There were too many employees, and you had to make that hard choice to basically say, "Hey, I'm sorry, we're just not going to need you," and that's tough. You know, a lot of people think it was callous to do, but we were financially almost insolvent at the time, and especially we had, I think, $1.5 million in unpaid bills to vendors and things. It was pretty bad. Our reserves were basically depleted. The previous mayor said, "I'm leaving you with the account in the black." And that was a true story. He left the account in the black, but if you had paid all your bills, it was very seriously in a very negative position and paid all your and had all your reserves like they were. And using credit, which I have little experience with, we borrowed some money and started, you know, working and making the budget cuts that we needed to make. Like I said, we started operating the town just operationally $4 to $5 million a year cheaper. That's verifiable in audits. I can show anybody that will refute or dispute that.
I was going to say your banking experience came in handy.
Yeah,
and
it really did. But look, one of the keyest things that I did, and I do account this because I do feel anointed to do this for now. I feel like God put people in front of me that you could put in these places to take work with you. And we have a wonderful staff and employees that are still here doing the job for the town and giving our people good government. And I think that's important. And I rely on these people. They have my back and I have theirs. And they're smart people that do their job. You know, all of our bills are being paid on time. Not say if we get the invoice, it's getting paid and we have the money to do it now
because we're managing. Yeah.
And you know, we're paying all everybody's retirement in there. All the reports are done. All the payroll are done correct and accurate. And it's just reestablished. There was never even any policies and procedures in place for this town that we've brought all these things and put these things in place. So whoever comes in mayor years down the road shouldn't have that hard of a job to just follow procedure and do what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the key is having people in place.
Right, right. So
key people.
Once you got things kind of organized and taken care of some of those things, are there some either economic development, community development projects?
That's going to be a good story. I want to tell you because this is very important. I really believe that the lifeblood of an economy, especially a small economy like ours and yours, is industry. You got to get some outside investment because without that, what you have, Mayor, is you have a finite amount of money that's going to be spent in your town every day.
Right.
So for these people that don't want industry, don't want anything, well, if mom and pop comes and open another shop, all that's going to do is slice the pie thinner for somebody else that you're going to lose that money and nobody, and you either have somebody do okay and the other one wither on the vine, so to speak. So what you got to do is really get active in economic development and go after these people to get outside money in. That's where you put, you know, people in houses, people doing things and having money in pockets to do businesses with the insurance companies, the dentists, the doctors, the banks. All those things are important. And that's my goal, is to set the table for the future of this town. We're in the process of expanding our substation, which is going to give us the power to be able to take on new industry. And we're expanding our water plant, which is going to double our capacity, because that's going to put us on the short list for an industry wanting to come in and say, "Hey, we can get our power now. We can get our water now." And guess what? They have a great community. I've really been promoting our community. I'm really proud of what we have here. And the amenities, the Sportsman's Paradise, man, it's a great place to for any industry to come in and maybe locate, because you go try to buy property close to a port in Baton Rouge or New Orleans, you're fixing to pay a princely sum for it. Hey, come to Vidalia. I mean, we're just a few miles up the river, and we have space available, and we're in the process of trying to complete a port here within the next few years.
Are you getting, and this is something I've talked about with just a few people, not as much on the podcast, but I'm starting to introduce this in my conversations with attracting industry. Are you finding that because of COVID, which I never would have wished on anybody, it seems to have this effect that businesses maybe are taking a second look or even a third look at a smaller town? You just referenced, hey, we're a little cheaper to do business than a Baton Rouge or New Orleans. And now, because dense population turned out to be a bad thing in the last year, are you getting a little more, maybe a little better bites, a little more interest from industry? Is that something? Or are you doing things to try to capitalize on that?
Well, yes and no. Yeah. Well, the answer is going to be yes, but I'm trying to get.
And like it's early on.
I'm trying to get the table set to have ready to attract these companies in, and do business with us. My first focus is as a town and as a municipality is provide good clean water, give them good reliable sustainable power, natural gas, and then also we also have our own sanitation, which we give better service than anybody else in all those things. We have backdoor pickup on your garbage twice a week. Okay, this is twice a week. And we also have knuckle boom trucks that will pick up your trash. It's going to be a little longer right now because of the debris that we do have around town. Yeah. But this is all in just one cost of around $19 a month, for all of our citizens.
Wow.
And, and back when I was running the first time, a lot of people were saying, oh, he's going to privatize the garbage pickup. I'm going like, heaven forbid, that'd be the worst thing you can do is do something like that, because nobody can do it like our employees can do it or is better than they can. So I'm really proud of that. And the people, if you try to think about cutting any services, you are really, really skating on the proverbial thin ice, which we got outside right
That's
now.
That's right. It is kind of thin now that it's warming up.
Well, we heard from LMA's executive director, John Gallagher, at the beginning of this episode, but you may remember another member of the LMA staff that we spoke with on the podcast the last time we were in Louisiana.
Karen White, executive counsel for the Louisiana Municipal Association.
I caught up with Karen to get her take on how things have been in the cities, towns, and villages of Louisiana since my last trip there.
Well, hey, Karen, how's it going?
Hey, I'm good, Mayor Matt. How about you?
I'm good. So good to see you again.
You as well.
Nice to be in Louisiana. We were joking earlier about, we actually planned this. You were kind enough to invite me to speak at the Midwinter Conference about a year ago. That was February of 2020.
Right.
Who would have predicted in Baton Rouge at the conference that the next 12 months would be full of coronavirus pandemic and all the fallout public health-wise and economic development-wise? So, and then, of course, I was going to come last year in the summer, but there were some minor storms that hit the Louisiana
coast. Some mild
coast.
Precipitation
yes,
and a little
yes.
bit of wind.
A little bit, yes, in the Category 5 hurricane range, yeah. So I guess I feel like I need to get caught up on what's been going on in Louisiana. How have your cities, towns, and villages fared? I know that's going to be a varied answer. What's LMA been working on?
Sure. It is great to see you. And I have to point out for our listeners that the week that you're here physically in Louisiana, we've had record cold temperatures, massive power outages. I almost feel like you're a harbinger for bad weather.
I was nervous. Yeah. Because last time I was here, coronavirus came about a month after that. And I tried to come again. And that's when the hurricanes hit back to back. And now this. So I apologize if I had anything to do with any of those.
I think it's coincidence. And I appreciate you being such a trooper and driving through the horrible conditions to be here. Yes, so much has happened in the past year. We talk fondly about our Midwinter Conference and how seemingly naive we were then as to what lay ahead in 2020. Obviously, the advent of the coronavirus on Louisiana's shores, for us, it came about beginning of March, maybe the second week of March, and that's when you started to see the executive order come down from the governor and everything sort of went into shutdown. So that's something, obviously, that is a global issue and not just Louisiana. So that certainly was a punch in the gut for our members. It resulted in the loss of a lot of revenue in the form of sales tax, but also other revenue sharing types of initiatives. For example, New Orleans is largely tourism based. And so when that shut down just after Mardi Gras, by the way. It was a big loss for New Orleans, but towns, villages, and cities all over the state have had to absorb that impact. So that's obviously a big one. And then, as you pointed out, in the summertime, we had not one, not two, not three, not four, but five, six hurricanes arrive on our shores.
I won't ask you to name them.
Six of them. The big three, the ones that caused the most damage, of course, were Hurricane Laura, Hurricanes Delta, and Zeta. Mm-hmm. Between the three of them, they managed to carve out swaths over the entire state, resulting in every parish being, to some extent, affected, if not declared an emergency, a state of emergency for each of our 64 parishes. So it was quite the summer. It's something that we're still struggling to recover with, but I think we're going to get there.
Yeah, well, I've already seen it because I did a check-in episode with towns that I got to visit, cities, towns, and villages, that I got to visit previously and check in on people. And of course, everyone's suffering to some degree or another, but just to see stories of resiliency has been inspiring. So I'm looking forward to seeing five more of those on this little road trip series.
I'm very excited as well. I think it's a great time when things are sort of culminating in terms of vaccines becoming more available, people being sick and tired of being sick and tired of being cooped up.
Yeah.
And so it's forced everyone, not just the pandemic, but the natural disasters as well, has forced everyone to be very innovative about working and interpersonal relationships. And so, you know, I think that it's with every tragedy comes an opportunity. And I think that's what you've seen our small towns especially sort of wrap their arms around all of this as an opportunity to move forward and get better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to my visits and I'm looking forward to checking in with you on each episode along the way.
Sounds perfect.
Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Irwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
We'll talk about, you actually mentioned kind of attracting things and the amenities that people want to see. So, and you mentioned being right here, Sportsman's Paradise, that's all Louisiana, right? So what could people come and experience here? I know you guys seem to have, they're all covered in snow and ice right now, but your ball fields and recreational facilities are pretty impressive just from the roadside.
Look, this podcast couldn't be long enough for me to tell you about the amenities that we have. Of course, I told you I love the fish. We have probably more surface water and bank area within this region right here than anywhere in the country. We have, you know, old natural. When I told you they redid the Mississippi River and then rechannelized it.
When they moved the city.
Yeah. And our lakes here are called Oxbow Lakes because they used to be the Mississippi River and they took them and straightened the river out. And it left lakes there that some of them aren't influenced by the river anymore. And some of them are. So we have some old rivers that are still influenced by the rise and fall of Mississippi River, which are restocked every year with white perch and bass and bream catfish. And then also these islands and the hardwoods that we've got through here are full of deer, turkey. I mean, we got the hills of Mississippi right over here that's full of game and fishing galore here. Speaking of fishing, Vidalia, Louisiana, if you go and look, there's the biggest and most popular fishing organization in the country right now, bass fishing, is Major League Fishing.
Oh, okay.
Major League Fishing has been to Vidalia twice
in
the last 4 years. So that is really an accomplishment for little Vidalia.
It seems like there'd be plenty to make the rounds, but if they're coming here twice, that
they
be
came here
to
twice,
come back for,
and really that was really a very exciting time. But see what people saw was all over the country because this goes all over, and I'm telling you, it is the most popular bass fishing show on the planet.
Yeah,
and they showcased Vidalia twice, showing them hey, what we have around here, some of the amenities and stuff. And
did
what,
you get to go on the show? Were you on?
We were on. We got to do a spotlight on our area, and we was able to air a commercial on that went played all over the country, and it was really fun. And everybody had a good experience. They want to come back.
Did they take you out fishing? Is what I want to know.
I can't believe that. Well, their format is they're real secretive about. Now you might could take maybe some of their administrative people out, but as far as their competitors that are here. It's a hush-hush thing. That's why they try to put everybody on an even playing field that don't know where they're even going, you know, or haven't been there before. So
couldn't let you know it might get out, huh?
Yeah, but anyway, talking about the amenities, we have that. We have our ballparks. We have a riverfront, which is beautiful. We got a beautiful view of the bluffs. We maintain it like a golf course. We have a pavilion, and it's really a pond where we fill the Louisiana Wildlife and Fisheries will come and stock it with catfish. They'll bring 600 pounds of catfish periodically and put in there for residents to go out there and catch. And they just recently put rainbow trout in them, which I don't think everybody's having luck because a lot of people aren't trout fishermen around here. But our ponds are full of rainbow trout right now.
They're going to stay full if no one's catching them, huh?
Well, I've not heard anybody catching them. Nobody's catching them. Or if they are, they're not telling anybody. Kind of like a typical fisherman. If they do, they're lying about it.
They found a good spot. They're not going to let anybody know.
They're not
going
to let nobody know about this. But we do have some great amenities here. We have a lot of good schools. We have churches, you know, a diverse group of churches. And the people are really good, great food. You can tell by looking at me that the food's great. Yeah, it's really a wonderful place to come and live. We have a great police force where crime is low. Our fire rating is a 2, which is just 1 point away from perfect.
Almost can't get any better than that.
So those are some things that we feel like that we've done. We got our port going to be completed. We're going to have power. We're going to have water. All these things that an industry that would want to come here and locate in Vidalia, Louisiana, can come here. And talking with you, I told you that we have Syra Technologies has brought their plant here, and they're the only manufacturer of processing graphite down to an almost totally pure form that goes in lithium batteries, and we're the only plant outside of China in the world, and they're right here in Vidalia, Louisiana.
Wow.
And so this is going into the batteries, and with the battery stuff coming on, the Tesla, Volkswagens, all them.
I was going to say your lithium ion batteries are not going out of style anytime soon.
No, which major auto manufacturer just said by 2030 they're going to be 100% electric? Was it GM?
I want to say it was General Motors. Yeah,
it might have been. Yeah. I mean, so. And plus, you know, we've all heard of the China processes are not something that they want to hang because they say it's dirty. It's not, environmentally safe the way their processes are. This company's really, really demonstrated that they're really environmentally safe, good partners, and I think that it's going to be a great future. In fact, I think they completed their plant in 2017, 18. They're already fixing to do a huge expansion.
Well, for a variety of reasons, people are wanting to have things made here in the United States, and increasingly they're finding places to make them in small towns like Vidalia. So that's really incredible. They're doing it here.
That's right. And we have a dental plant that's new too since I've been here that is coming on. They've had some difficulties with COVID and a lot of things on the startup part of it. But this is they also are right here in Vidalia, Louisiana. They have a specialized process for making dental that. Yes, we're really proud that they're here, and we hope, wish them luck. I think they're going to be fine. We just got to get through this pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
They've had just so many hurdles. The engineers that had this new equipment and technology for making denim was from Turkey, and guess what? When they were installing equipment, COVID hit, and they couldn't even bring the engineers over to put the stuff together. It's one thing after another, which – that's another one of those things maybe some citizens don't understand.
What's the big deal?
There's been some problems. What's wrong with that plant out there? They're not doing what they're supposed to do. That's it, you know.
They'll always be that. Well, you certainly got plenty of things going on, but do you guys have, local festivals or events or things that people can come participate in specifically?
We do. We have several things. We have a few car shows that come here that usually have a good turnout with car shows that they have on the riverfront. It's a lot of fun. The Women's Club does. They have a Miss Vidalia pageant, which is really, really well attended. And then they also have the Jim Bowie Festival.
Okay.
Through recent years, it's kind of dwindled a little bit, but we're trying to maybe infuse some new ideas in that. I would like for us to make it a really, really big festival here because we have so much here to get. What makes a festival successful is have vendors here that's going to be selling things or cooking food. And we've had talent in the past. You know, I can remember years ago when I was real active with the chamber, I might have been president that year. My brother back, we had it at the Tacony Grounds back here. He did a great tribute to Elvis, and a lot of people loved that. We had music groups come in. Religious gospel groups would come in and sing. It was really, really well attended. It's just kind of it's been moved around. Different activities have been moved away from it, put back in it, and so forth. And now with this big complex we got up here, I'd love to see us have, we always had what they call a dare fishing tournament that would have, used to have, you know, 500-600 kids. And I was the waymaster because, it was pretty interesting. So, you know, you'd have snakes, turtles, everything in the world brought up there from the way that they caught out at some of your local lakes and rivers. But we could have a festival where you have a tennis tournament, softball tournament, baseball tournaments, and have one big festival, soccer fields. We have soccer fields, but have a big stage with bands because in that way you'd have a captured audience here with all the people playing in these activities, whether it's tennis, baseball, softball, parents, kids, you know, that's those people between games, you know, are going to go listen to music and maybe shop your vendors. And I could really see that being a really big thing and maybe even doing a reenactment of the Jim Bowie duel, which they said actually happened.
That's what I was going to ask the festival.
Yeah, actually happened on the Vidalia side.
Okay.
It's on some sandbar around here somewhere they said it actually happened on there. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But
you're gonna claim it so you can have the festival.
Yeah, we're going to claim it. You know, you see the Bowie knife, it's pretty interesting. This history, and if you start reading about Bowie knives, of course, I don't want to go down that path with you on the history of that. But we have some other things. The Natchez has a Natchez balloon race, which is it packs out our local community. I mean, far as people come from all over.
And these are hot air balloons.
Hot air balloons. Yeah, I mean, there used to be as much as 80, 90 balloons back in the day. But it seems like it's always the bad weather hits. But
yeah,
then COVID this year had everybody kind of restricted. We still had a lot of people in town. They didn't have the organized thing where you could all go on the grounds where they have circus rides and all kind of things and active bands, big bands come in and play. It's really been. It's been fun. It really is. And hopefully it can get back to normal this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I got to ask a question because there's actually a hot air balloon kind of festival in a town nearby Osceola. Fitzgerald has Harmony Jubilee. Those are neat to see. Just a bunch of hot air balloons out there. But I guess I haven't heard of, or maybe if I have, I've forgotten, hot air balloon races. So that sounds like a slow-going thing. So how long and how far do they go for a race?
Well, they call it a race, but here's what they actually do. There's a barge in the Mississippi River. And depending on the winds, they have a challenge amongst the captains of the balloons. They have a beanbag, basically, and on this barge is a target.
Okay.
And wherever the winds are going, they have got to calculate what's going to take me across that barge, where I'm going to
Drop the beanbag,
and whoever hits
closest
the mark
the
closest gets wins the thing. So that's the race. It's actually, I guess,
I was trying to say shooting, but you're not shooting.
Yeah, you're not. Drop. Yeah, you're not doing that.
It's a target drop.
So, so it's a target drop, and
but they call them balloon races.
Yeah, now so. I've always
it's
wondered,
a race
though,
to see who can get the closest to the middle.
Yeah,
of the target.
I've always wondered, if you don't, how do they measure if it hit in the water? You know, who got the closest?
Nope, it went on target.
Yeah, or you just start throwing it as far as you can.
There you go.
Whoever has the best arm.
That's right.
I don't know, but anyway, but it's pretty cool. It really is. And plus, we have activities on the Vidalia side. You know, we have a circus and we have vendors and cooking and stuff over here. And
well, it sounds like that kind of goes back to that collaboration. Even though you got a river and it's two different states, it's a combined community.
Yeah,
as long as the bridge traffic goes both ways.
That's right. Absolutely.
Everybody benefits.
And it does.
So there's fun to be had over on this side too.
Yep.
All right. Well, cool. Well, Mayor, as we start to wrap things up, I want to give you the same opportunity I give all my guests and let you talk directly to the Small Town Podcast audience and tell them why they should come visit or maybe move or invest in a new business and bring their family to Vidalia, Louisiana.
You know, that's a really intriguing question because I'm going to use myself, for example. But by the way, thank you so much for coming to Vidalia. I've enjoyed this. It's been a lot of fun. It's been giving me a mind break from thinking about sadder things, my dad passing and the bad weather we've got and the things we're going through. But you know what? I was one of four boys, and my other brothers moved away. And after I got through with school, I came home. I've been here the rest of my life, and I chose to be here. And I probably could have went somewhere else and done something different, maybe been more successful, maybe whatever it could have been. And I've lived my life. I'm 61 years old now. And after reflecting on what I've done, I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. I really wouldn't. And I've seen a lot of great things. I've lived a great life here. I feel safe. I feel loved. I have a lot of love for the people here. And if people will come to Vidalia, I think they're going to feel the same thing. We accept people in. They're not outsiders. They're not considered outsiders. You come play ball with us. Come worship with us. Come play with us. And also, you know, just have a good quality of life. I know that Natchez, the economic arm there called Natchez Inc. that we're a member of, has a program going on, Shift South. As far as these people in these cities that are just burnt out, you know, it's just people on top of one another and COVID and pandemic and hysteria and violence and all this stuff and communities being torn apart. Man, I wouldn't take nothing in the world for where I live. I really wouldn't. And even though we all have our, you know, our moments, our hardships that we have, at the end of the day, it's so much worth it. You just grow as an individual. And I've been able to do that myself. Even, you know, I was getting older. You'd have thought I was set in my ways, but I've grown a lot too as a person. And I'm really excited. I want to leave something that people can look back and say, oh, well, that was a great thing they did here when they did this, or when they did this with the hydro money, or they set the table for us to be a booming pop. I mean, have some high quality jobs, things like that, and also have great places to raise your family and safe places to raise your family. Again, we have so much to be thankful for that we were born here. That I was born here. But you know what? Other people can come here. Even though you weren't born here, we'll take you in. We'll make you part of our family. We'll make you part of our family. And we think that you'll see, as we did, that you're not going to want to leave, that you're not going to want to go home. This will be home.
This will become home.
This will become home.
Well, Mayor Buzzcraft, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, Mayor, thank you so much. And I wish you success and on your travels into other towns and villages, and that you'll that if you learn something new, call me up and tell me what I missed.
All right. We'll share it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again.
Now, before we go, let's get to know Mayor Buzzcraft just a little bit better.
All right. It's the time of the podcast where we ask some get-to-know-you questions of our guests. So we're going to get to know Mayor Buzzcraft.
Is this going to be a pop test?
Yeah. You should be ready. You may have to think a little bit.
I may have to think.
But you're the only person that can answer these. I'm actually excited about this first one with you.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I'm curious if Buzz was your given name at birth. And so the first question is, do you have or have you ever had a nickname?
Well, Buzz is my nickname. And look, this is a great story, and I've told it a lot. I was going to say a million times, but people, when I do that, says, I told you a million times not to exaggerate. Well, this is a true story. My dad's oldest brother, my dad was 12 years old when his oldest brother, Edwin Jean, was killed in a hunting accident. His name was Edwin Jean, which I don't know where my grandmother got that name either. But anyway, I had three brothers that were older than me, and they were like stair steps, you know. They were 7, 6, 5, and then I was a mistake, I feel like, later on after they had their
you
family.
The baby.
So when this mistake came along, my grandmother, I think, pleaded with my dad, please, if it's a boy, please name it Edwin Jean. They was wanting me to be a girl. Surprise, surprise. So I was a guy, so I was a boy. So my daddy named me Edwin Jean for, you know, at the pleading of my grandmother. Well, you know, that was fine. I didn't know it being an infant, but as I went into school, teachers would get to my name, I knew who they were at. They're going,
when they're having trouble with it.
Yeah,
you know,
we can't say Edwin. They didn't know Edwin Jean. They've heard of Edwin. And my dad, there was an astronaut called Edwin Aldridge.
Yeah.
And they called him Buzz Aldridge.
Second man on the moon.
Yeah, second man on the moon.
Yeah.
But he's got two Zs. Mine's one Z. So they started calling me Buzz. My mama calls me Bo, was calling me Bo. But they started calling me Buzz. And that stuck. And how I got the name.
Because of the astronaut. Because his first name and your first name were not the same, but similar enough.
But they started calling you Buzz. Here's the ironic part about this thing. Even though that's my nickname, everything's in Buzz. Even my certificate from the state, and for all those years that I signed documents for the it's Buzz.
Buzz. I don't see quotes around Buzz. Yeah. In the middle of your name, I saw it when I walked in and met you in your office. You're Mayor Buzz with one Z.
That's right.
Yeah. So
one Z.
And it wasn't in quotes. So I did make the right assumption that was not your given name.
That's
I figured
right.
There was a story there.
Yeah.
And that was a good one.
Well, and, you know, it fit me because, you know, I was a fisherman. There were boats called a pro craft. And then, you know, when I was tournament fishing, I had my name on the side of a buzz craft. And what was funny, people come by and they say, where they make them buzz crafts at?
I thought it was a corporate name.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
I'm the buzz in the craft. All right. Next question. Hopefully just as exciting a story on this one. What would be your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I already know that.
Oh, good. See?
I know that one.
Some people struggle with this.
Well, one of my favorite, I love old movies and I love movies, but you know, this past Christmas, you know, my dad was getting sick and all the family wanted to be, you know, but we knew this probably was going to be the last Christmas. So we rented a room at the convention center and my brother brought, and some family brought karaoke and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And it's a song I always sing, but I was almost crying. I couldn't hardly do it. It's called I Crossed My Heart by George Strait. And Pure Country, remember the movie at the end of it? Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Cross my heart, George Strait. All right, next question. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish? Lots of good eating around here, so can't wait to hear this.
That would be a tough one. Of course, everything my mom makes is cooks. She's an amazing cook. She still cooks for us every Sunday. But as far as a meal, oh, my goodness. I love all foods. You can tell.
Well, at least give me a genre. What's a good meal you want your mom to cook?
One of our department heads, he cooks professionally, and he loves to cook meats and does ribeyes and all that kind of stuff. So I went and bought one of these grills. He taught me to buy what's called a PK grill, where they compete on.
Yeah.
So I'm learning. I love ribeye steak. I love steaks. I love Mexican food. But steaks, hamburgers, and all that sort of
good. All right, so good ribeye steak on the grill.
Yeah, that's hard to beat.
We'll go with
that. I love eating fried fish and deer meat, fried deer meat. Come on.
I was trying to help you get to one answer.
I know, but I don't have one. It's just...
everything.
Yeah, it's everything.
All right, we'll let you go with that. Final question. If you could attend any concert of any singer, duo, band, any kind of performer of any kind,
easy.
Whether they're dead or alive.
I've done it.
Whose concert?
I've done it. Elvis Presley.
Elvis?
1973 and 75.
Is that why I like your brother's rendition and the tribute from so much, the Bowie Festival?
No, Jerry, growing up, you know, we were all big Elvis fans. Jerry, especially. My brother Jerry has everything in the world Elvis, every record, you all see his sound room. It's just crazy. But anyway, I was a kid, and we went to Monroe twice. In 73, he just had done Aloha from Hawaii, and he was doing an American tour. And my parents, and we all went. It was amazing. It really was. That was the most charismatic entertainer I'd ever seen. And that had a big impact on me. And I love it. I love all that. I listen to it still on Sirius XM. I listen to it. If I'm not listening to local radio, I listen to a lot of Elvis.
Yeah.
And or my son. My son's a musician. He lives in Portland, and he's done well. He's really exciting, too. He was Rolling Stones, one of the top new musicians for 2016.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's a singer-songwriter, whole deal. So his name is Kyle Kraft, and you ought to pull him up and listen to him if you're traveling around. So.
Well, good plug. Maybe that's the concert you go to.
Yeah.
He can open for Elvis in this imaginary concert world we're doing.
Well, I may be a little bit biased on it, but he really is a really – and see, he had no formal training growing up. He was all self-taught, everything.
Yeah.
He did it. I mean, when he's going to college, he'd come home, he liked to go to resale shops. He's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
There'd be a horn there. He'd pick it up and play a horn. I said, Kyle, when did you practice that? I ain't never played. He picked up playing. I'm going like, it's just amazing. It's a gift. I mean, it's kind of crazy. But yeah, Elvis would be that guy.
Elvis is the concert. All right.
It was amazing. I got to do it not once, but twice.
Wow. Yeah. And you'd do it again if you had the chance.
Yeah, but it's going to be up in heaven. Yeah, but I got some other people I want to see first before I get there.
That'd be a great concert.
Yeah.
All right, Mayor Buzzcraft, thanks for letting us get to know you.
All right, good.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Buzzcraft for talking with me. We're so thankful to the Louisiana Municipal Association for inviting us back and for partnering with us. And we're also so thankful to Louisiana Economic Development for sponsoring this series on Louisiana Small Towns. As always, I appreciate our season sponsors for Season 4 of Small Town Podcast, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. Join me next time as we explore another small town in Louisiana. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Ocilla, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.